A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. What a day! Have you got any popcorn left? I'm, of course, talking about PMQs. And there's this other thing before PMQs. There's this guy that was talking. We'll probably touch on that in a sec. PMQs unpacked. Boris Johnson versus Keir Starmer. Patrick Maguire joining me this week to unpick exactly how Boris Johnson reacted to those extraordinary claims from Dominic Cummings. That's coming up next. First, our columnist panel, no Alice Thompson today. Today, her role will be taken by John Stephens from the Daily Mail. So it's John Stephens and Robert Crampton. First of all, in a sentence, your initial thoughts so far, Robert Crampton.
Well, I thought it started quite slowly, and now he's warming up with the Hancock thing, and I think he just mentioned Trump and the CIA, which is
yes.
Pretty tasty.
Yeah.
To begin with, I thought he'd come to bury Boris, and he's actually burying himself. He keeps apologising. I mean, I think, you know, it speaks well of him in a way, but it was more about general incompetence and chaos and his own failings and everybody's failings, but now he's getting into the specifics of it a bit more. I mean, well done to Rosie Cooper, and also well done to Jeremy Hunt. It left me thinking, I wish Jeremy Hunt had won the Tory leadership election.
although listening to it, you wonder if Dominic Cummings wishes that Jeremy Hunt had won the Tory leadership contest.
Indeed.
John, yeah. your initial thoughts?
Well, I think the key things that we've learned is that the government was ill-prepared, that it moved too slow, and it was chaos inside Number 10, which is all things I think that everyone in the country knew that was the case. But hearing the actual details of it and hearing Dominic Cummings settling all these scores, going through everyone like Boris Johnson, Carrie, the dog, Mark Sedwell, Matt Hancock, you know, one by one throwing out these grenades of accusations against him, I think that has got the potential to actually be quite damaging.
I suppose it's the confirmation, official confirmation, you know, it's clearly his version of events, but an official confirmation of what lots of people suspect anyway is still notable. Let's dip in and we've sort of picked out some of the highlights or, you know, the most significant moments so far. This was Dominic Cummings kicking off more than an hour and a half ago now. He started with a very, very clear statement, apologised to the families who've lost loved ones during the pandemic, saying the government had failed them.
I think it's right that the public selected representatives are trying to figure out what happened and the lessons to be learned. I hope you'll get all the senior people involved in here to speak to you about it. The truth is that senior ministers, senior officials, senior advisers like me fell disastrously short of the standards that the public has a right to expect of its government in a crisis like this. When the public needed us most, the government failed. And I'd like to say to all the families of those who died unnecessarily how sorry I am for the mistakes that were made and for my own mistakes at that.
Yeah, we had quite a lot of messages in on that. Jeff saying, refreshing to see someone accept responsibility for failure. The proper damage will be done on second lockdown delay, though, which actually they haven't even got on to yet. Rebecca saying, pretty much reflects what the press could have been focusing on. Refreshing to get a straight apology, whether meant or not. It's something we've become unaccustomed to. But then David says he's a man so far out of his depth that he should never been allowed near the centre. Anna says, my thoughts are with the families of the 130,000 people who are no longer with us and the many, many thousands whose lives have been changed forever. This really is awful. And I suppose that's the important thing so far is that, you know, he was very clear up front, Dominic Cummings, apologising to all those affected. Do you think that we've learnt something sort of devastatingly new, John Stevens, that we didn't, that we really didn't know before, that diverges from the narrative of, you know, journalists. You know, we've had books already written on it. Is there something that we didn't know before?
I think so far, no. There's been no key thing that he's come out and said that I've thought, oh my goodness, I cannot believe that happened. You know, there have been obviously all of these allegations about how there were mistakes in government. There hasn't been so far one key thing that we've learned that you think, oh my gosh, that's going to bring down the government. But obviously it sounds like there's hours and hours more to go. And also, you know, at one point he said that he was willing to hand over the text messages and WhatsApps between him and the Prime Minister. Obviously, the committee were keen to kind of get his agreement to get as much hoover up as much information as they can. I think, you know, Dominic Cummings isn't going to stop. And I don't think Team Carrie are going to stop briefing against him. I think that's the possible problem for the government, is it isn't going to just end here today. It's just going to keep going.
I suppose that's, I mean, given, I mean, you're right, when you listed all the people he sort of had drive-by shootings on, we've had, you know, Donald Trump was trying to bomb the Middle East. Carrie was particularly upset about a story in the Times about the dog. And in the middle of all this, he was sort of raising the alarm about how to respond to coronavirus. Let's take a little bit of another clip. This is Dominic Cummings telling the committee that despite seeing the risks of COVID on the news, it was still not really a government priority throughout much of January and February last year.
Government itself, and number 10, was not operating on a war footing in February on this in any way, shape or form. Lots of key people were literally skiing in the middle of February. It wasn't until the last week of February that there was really any sort of sense of urgency, I would say, across the in terms of number 10 in the Cabinet Office.
Would you say that you were operating on a war footing in February?
As I said before, I think in the first 10 days or so of February, no, because there were all sorts of things going on. There was the HS2 nightmare, there was the reshuffle going on, and then that happened on the 12th, and then the PM went away on holiday for 2 weeks. And then after that, I didn't go on holiday. I was in Downing Street throughout that period, and I spent more and more of my time on it. However, and again, I want to apologise for this. I didn't. Obviously, in retrospect, I should have been hitting the panic button far more than I was in February. I did increasingly hit the panic button as February went on. But I, like most people, I think were wrongly reassured by things like the WHO and about what we were being told internally.
That was him discussing the impact back in January and February. You said that lots of people were on holiday back in February. Do you get the sense that he's yet landing this idea, Robert Crampton? Is Dominic Cummings landing the idea that he doesn't seem to be, so far at least, doesn't feel as if he was the all-knowing genius at the heart. You know, he was clearly panicked like everyone else was.
Yeah.
But was forced to admit, under some pretty decent questioning, actually, from both Greg Clark and Jeremy Hunt, for instance, that he did not say, why is Cheltenham and Liverpool going ahead? He now says he wishes he had done. But I imagine there's quite a lot of people at the centre of government who now wishes they'd sounded the alarm earlier.
Yeah, quite. I mean, he hasn't been able to say that he was a lone voice in the wilderness of Churchill in the 1930s saying, you know, this is all terrible and this is, and I've, you know, been warning against this. I mean, he obviously didn't do that. I think there's a couple of things that in terms of you said in terms of revelations. I thought it was interesting that the cabinet secretary thought Matt Hancock should be sacked. I hadn't heard that before. And also, I think Cummings, in his apology, he said that people have died unnecessarily. Now, that getting that out into the public discourse, I think, is quite significant because we haven't actually heard that before.
Yeah.
That, the government saying that people died who didn't need to have died.
Yeah.
That opens up a whole... I mean, Rosie Cooper was talking about corporate manslaughter. I mean, that opens up a whole avenue of attack in terms of incompetence. And so, therefore, the general sort of air of chaos, rather than saying, oh, well, okay, they didn't know what they're doing, governments never do, it becomes rather more significant, doesn't it?
Yes, I think that's... And I suppose it's sort of implied about, you know, no one thinks that, you know, this is the absolute minimum number of people that might have died.
No, it's
slightly different.
He's just really put it out there.
And that's really interesting.
I do think that. I think that is, that, I mean, that is a bit of a headline for me. If Cummings says people died who didn't need to die, we sort of knew it, but he said it. That makes the incompetence a completely different order, doesn't it?
John Stevens?
Yeah, I thought one of the particularly interesting moments was when Dominic Cummings was asked, why didn't you push the PM harder to kind of bring in lockdown, bring in these measures? And he said, what if I was wrong? I didn't know if I was right or wrong. And I think that's the problem that everyone had in government. It wasn't that everyone knew the right thing to do and that was deliberately ignored, that no one had the kind of best information we were learning about this virus. And I think that is kind of the biggest get out for Boris Johnson in Downing Street, was that none of this was done maliciously, that a lot of the mistakes that were made were just made because it was just a chaotic situation, even though stuff like the preparation hadn't been done properly.
Robert, you mentioned his comments on Matt Hancock. Let's just take a listen to what Dominic Cummings had to say about the Health Secretary.
I think that the Secretary of State for Health should have been fired for at least 15, 20 things, including lying to everybody in multiple occasions, in meeting after meeting, in the Cabinet room and publicly.
I mean, that's pretty strong. I mean...
But, I mean, we need the evidence. I mean, it's like the you know, Boris saying... bodies piling up in the streets. People want to see the evidence. I mean,
and actually, interestingly, Rosie Cooper, the Labour MP on the committee, asked Dominic Cummings about that bodies piled up in the streets comment, but she did it as part of a two-part question, and he only answered the other part, and then they sort of moved on. It was somebody else's. So it'll be interesting to see if anyone comes back to that. And I suppose the key thing that we need to remember in all of this is that it wasn't Matt Hancock that was fired; it was Dominic Cummings, and he is a witness in all this, but this is, you know, his truth is not necessarily the truth, John Stephen.
Yeah, and I think that he's not necessarily helped himself in advance of today's hearing by putting out all of the tweets over the last few days, that he has looked like a man with a grudge, a kind of former employee who's got these scores to settle. And even though what he does say, I think it will get a lot of attention, a lot of it does have the potential to be hugely damaging for the government. I don't think he's helped himself by putting all these tweets out there the last few days. He does look like an eccentric who kind of wants to take down the government. And I think that will be kind of, do people trust him or do they trust Boris Johnson more? And I think a lot of the public will be suspicious of Dominic Cummings, especially after what happened last year with the whole Barnard Castle debacle.
I was chatting, I think one day last week, to a minister who'd been in the room for some of those early meetings and was quite surprised, given that, you know, Dominic Cummings quite often was just sort of sitting at the back of those meetings. The main thing they remember from his contribution was what a mess he looked, you know, turning up in his gardening clothes and he could barely do up his shoelaces, was the phrase that was used to me. And, you know, he's sort of wise after the event now, but I suppose it's one of those things that ultimately someone has to make a decision. You know, Boris Johnson's the one who has to make the decision. It's on his shoulders, whatever the decision he makes in terms of the impact on the economy, the impact on public health. And, you know, Dominic Cummings, although he might have thought he was running the country for large parts of this, ultimately it's the Prime Minister's decision. He has all this advice coming at him from scientists, from medical people, from political people, from super forecasters. And he's the one who has to sort of absorb all this information. Robert?
Yes, I mean, yeah, and people will, I think, will and have been very forgiving of the fact that wrong decisions were made or right decisions were not taken, or they were taken too late, because it was a chaotic, difficult, unprecedented situation. And they're generally willing to forgive Boris a great deal, aren't they? In a way that they perhaps they take a look at Dominic Cummings and think, I'm not entirely sure about this man. But what they won't forgive, if he can substantiate these allegations about the price that Boris was prepared to pay to avoid the second lockdown, they will not forgive that. But he needs to give us some evidence.
John?
Yeah, I think especially in this first section, you know, when he's been talking a lot about the sage advisors, the scientists got it wrong, they were feeding us the wrong information. You think that's almost quite helpful for Boris Johnson, that he was getting this information that then turned out to be wrong. He's been provided with these strategies which turned out to be ineffective and the wrong thing to do. And so if you're Boris Johnson, you can say, well, what was I meant to do? You know, Boris Johnson's obviously not an expert in, you know, diseases like this. And so he was doing what he thought was best on the information he had available, that even though Dominic Cummings is clearly no Boris Johnson fan anymore, I think certainly in this first section, some of the stuff he said has been quite helpful in that way. But as Robert says, as we come on to the later stuff about the second lockdown, you know, last November, you know, what happened around Christmas time, I think that's where he's got potential to be slightly more damaging.
John Stevens and Robert Crampton there. Of course, you can read Robert in the Times magazine every Saturday. And of course, you can read me in the Times on a Saturday too. Just get yourself a Times subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/Times Red Box. Right, up next, after those claims from Dominic Cummings, let's find out how Boris Johnson responded. It's PMQ's Unpacked.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Red Box podcast. Now it's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio, unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley.
And Patrick Maguire. So
you must get Lindsay Hall to sort that out.
Yes, we do need to get a whole load of those so that we've got all bases covered. So Tim Shipman's away this week. I assume that wherever he is on his holidays, he's got a big bucket of popcorn in front of him and while he's been watching Dominic Cummings. So we are now, 2.5 hours in? Patrick, what's your main takeaway from it?
I think Matt Hancock is going to spend this afternoon drafting a lengthy statement or op-ed that may appear in a newspaper tomorrow, defending himself against those allegations is my main takeaway.
That's interesting. You think that's the? I mean, I suppose in terms of a lot of this is, you know, there's lots of dates and timings and reproduction values and all of that. But the raw politics of the Prime Minister's most senior, you know, only what 6 months ago, Prime Minister's most senior aide appearing in public to give the current sitting Prime Minister, it's fair to say, quite a kicking, revealing that he at one point wanted to be injected on television with coronavirus. That's quite a thing.
Well, and also saying, putting him on a par with Jeremy Corbyn.
Yeah.
With whom Dom Cummings worked to keep out of power with Boris Johnson.
And that's the interesting thing. You know, why, if you thought he was so awful, why did you campaign for him to remain as Prime Minister? That's one interesting question. But there's a lot of politics. He said that Matt Hancock should be fired. Some of the others, you know, Rishi Sunak seems to have come out of it quite well. Actually, Chris Whitty, Patrick Vallance seem to come out of it all right so far. We'll have to wait and see what happens when we get on to the second lockdown. But we know that Keir Starmer has been watching all morning. This is a big test for him as leader of the opposition. How hard do you think he's going to go on it all?
well, there's a wealth of material there. And we know Keir Starmer is often uncomfortable or disinclined to go to the jugular himself in his own words. But now he can quote WhatsApp tweets in abundance.
And let's find out how much of the last 2.5 hours he's just going to read out. Let's go live to the House of Commons. This is Keir Starmer.
It's the Leader of the Opposition, Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I join the Prime Minister in his comments about Hillsborough and Mike Weatherby? Mr. Speaker, this morning the Prime Minister's former closest adviser said, when the public needed us most, the government failed. Does the Prime Minister agree with that?
Mr. Speaker, the handling of this pandemic has been one of the most difficult things this country has had to do for a very long time. And none of the decisions have been easy. To go into a lockdown is a traumatic thing for a country. To deal with a pandemic on this scale has been appallingly difficult. And we've at every stage tried to minimise loss of life, to save lives, to protect the NHS. And we have followed the best scientific advice that we can, Mr. Speaker. Yeah.
And there, in a nutshell, is politics. The criticism that you failed, you let the country down, and Boris Johnson's response is, this is an incredibly difficult thing. We did our best. It's very difficult. We tried to minimise loss of life. The implication being, it didn't always go perfectly well.
Yes, there are two things. One, there's the old line about I may have even listened to it on Times Radio earlier, about voters not caring about how crises begin, but how they end. Government's passing on that metric. But the second thing, saying it's not easy, I say there's one flaw with Dominic Cummings' testimony, his argument, is that so much of it relies on a sort of deus ex machina argument where he says, if only you'd read this book on super forecasting, or if only you'd put this data scientist friend of mine in charge that nobody's ever heard of. It's all sort of, if only Superman was in charge of the pandemic response, things would have been fine. And whereas the government, quite rightly, or, you know, perceptively, is betting on the public having sympathy for the fallibility of humans facing a totally unprecedented policy question.
There is also, I mean, this is a sort of side point, this, but there's also something ironic about Keir Starmer now, aligning himself with Dominic Cummings when the Labour Party had done so much to discredit him and criticise him following the trip to Barnard Castle. And even at one point during the local election campaign this year, their messaging for a couple of days was that Dominic Cummings had a pay rise and nurses hadn't had a pay, and yet now he's a great ally. Well, anyway, let's go back. Question two from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, can I remind the Prime Minister that 1 year ago, almost to the day, he described his former adviser as, in his words, in every respect, acting responsibly, legally and with integrity. This morning, that same adviser has said that senior ministers fell, his words, disastrously short of the standards that the public has a right to expect of its government, and that lives were lost as a result. Does the Prime Minister accept that central allegation and that his inaction led to needless deaths?
No, Mr. Speaker, and of course all those matters will be reviewed in the course of the public inquiry that I have announced. I noticed that he is fixated, as ever, on the rear-view mirror, Mr. Speaker, whilst we on this side of the House are getting on with our job of rolling out the vaccines, making sure that we protect the people of this country. And that, I think, has been the decisive development on which I think people are rightly focusing. And I can tell the House that in spite of the continuing concern that we have about the Indian variant, we are increasing our vaccination programme at such a rate that we can now ask everybody over 30 to come forward, Mr. Speaker, and get vaccinated.
Keir Starmer.
Oh, and there we are again. I mean, actually, Boris Johnson's immediate answer is most interesting. Keir Starmer saying, do you accept that your actions led to needless deaths? And he replies, no, Mr. Speaker.
Well, that is a direct rebuke to almost everything Dominic Cummings has said this morning. And it's interesting that he immediately followed that with the segue into, but nobody wants to talk about that anyway.
Yeah, which you're fixated on the rear view mirror.
Which, interestingly, is what Grant Shapps on the broadcast round this morning said about Dominic Cummings himself. Clearly, the government believes that Keir Starmer and Dominic Cummings, who have now both been branded Captain Hindsight, I don't know what happens in the Hindsight Army when you've got two non-commissioned officers of the same
somebody,
rank.
Somebody texted in earlier saying he's Field Marshal Hindsight, Dominic Cummings, because he was obviously a bit more senior. But yeah, I suppose that's the ultimately politically to get through this. Boris Johnson can just do what he's done, you know, why he did so well in the local elections and everything else. Focus on, you know, the vaccine. And rightly or wrongly, and people who really dislike Boris Johnson really hate this, but a bit of recency bias, the fact that people think the vaccine program's going well, the fact that people are quite forgiving about an unprecedented thing hit, and we didn't have a precedent to base our reaction to, but certainly back in March anyway.
But interestingly, Boris Johnson saying, no, he's not responsible, begs the question, well, when he comes to give his testimony, who is he going to blame? And, you know, an intriguing passage in Dominic Cummings' line was Mark Sedwill, the Cabinet Secretary, and the Prime Minister both agreeing that Matt Hancock was a bit rubbish. So when the time comes, will he throw Matt Hancock under the bus as well?
Do let us know what you think about this. You can text us 8722, start your message with the word Times. What do you think about the exchanges at PMQs? Unpacked. Let's go back to the House of Commons. Question three.
Mr Speaker, it's no good the Prime Minister attacking me. It's his former chief. It's his former chief adviser who's looking back and telling the world how useless the Prime Minister was in taking key decisions. His former adviser. One of the most serious points made this morning is that the Prime Minister failed to recognise the severity of this virus until it was too late, dismissing it as, quote from this morning, another scare story, like the swine flu. Does the Prime Minister recognise that account of his own behaviour? And if so, will he apologise for being so complacent about the threat that this virus posed?
Mr Speaker, I don't think anybody could credibly accuse this government of being complacent about the threat that this virus poses at any point. We have worked flat out, Mr Speaker, to minimise loss of life, to protect the NHS, while they have flip-flopped, Mr Speaker, from one position to another, backing curfew one day, opposing it the next, backing lockdowns one day, opposing it the next, calling for tougher border controls one day, then saying that quarantine is a blunt instrument the next. Mr Speaker, we have got on with the job of protecting the people of this country from one of the worst pandemics in living memory, if not the worst in living memory. We have turned the corner, and it is no thanks, Mr Speaker, to the loyal opposition opposite.
Well, not so loyal opposition, possibly. I feel like we've been here before. I'm not sure that when Keir Starmer talks about, you know, now trying to quote Dominic Cummings, it necessarily worked. But the thing that... Have you read Danny Finkelstein's column in the Times?
I always read Danny Finkelstein's column.
Because he's there talking about, he was your former advisor. He's your former advisor now says that you've made a mess of it. And Danny's column is really interesting on this, is that basically, what did Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings think was going to happen when they shackled themselves to each other? How on earth could Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings have thought that their story was going to end in any other way to us basically ending up in this situation? You know, Boris Johnson obviously thought that he could change Dominic Cummings. Dominic Cummings thought he could change Boris Johnson. And we are where we are.
But also, as you say, we've been here before in that, crucially, Labour's critique, i.e. that the government was too slow to do X, Y, Z. It was slow on locking down. It was slow on PPE. It was slow on a second lockdown and a circuit breaker. These are all questions Keir Starmer has asked of the government before. And the fact that they are now accompanied by damning testimony from Dominic Cummings doesn't change the substance of the arguments being advanced on both sides. So the reason why it doesn't feel like Keir Starmer, despite the absolutely explosive, seismic, sensational morning we've had in the committee room, delete is applicable, it doesn't feel like he's knocking out of the park, because this is a fairly run-of-the-mill session of PMQs with new topical hooks for familiar questions that the Prime Minister has answered before and given by now very well-worn arguments and for his defence.
I think that's probably the sense that so far, at least, Keir Starmer's questions have been quite broad and not on some of the very clear specifics. Mm-hmm. For instance, did you ask Chris Whitty to inject you with coronavirus on TV would be not a bad question to ask. But anyway, let's go back to the House of Commons and see if Keir Starmer thinks to ask it.
Mr Speaker, I can see that the evidence of his former advisor is really getting to the Prime Minister this morning in that response. Another incredibly serious statement from the Prime Minister's former adviser this morning concerns the conduct of the Health Secretary, including an allegation that the Health Secretary misled other ministers and officials on a number of occasions. Now, I don't expect the Prime Minister to respond to that, but can he confirm from this morning's evidence... Can the Prime Minister... Can he confirm... Did the Cabinet Secretary advise him, the Prime Minister, that he, the Cabinet Secretary, had, quote, lost faith in the Health Secretary's honesty?
The answer to that is no, Mr. Speaker, and I'm afraid I haven't had the benefit of seeing the evidence that he's bringing to the House. But I must say that I think what the people of this country want us all to do is to get on with the delicate business now of trying to reopen our economy and restore people's freedoms, get back to our way of life by rolling out the vaccine. I would have thought that was a much more profitable line of inquiry for the Right Honourable Gentleman today. And that's why I think the people of this country want us to focus on.
Well, I'm afraid I haven't had the benefit of seeing the evidence he's bringing to the House today. So Boris Johnson obviously taken the decision not to watch, so therefore he can't respond to any of the claims.
Probably wise.
As a tactic, although he did then reject the suggestion that Mark Sedwell, the then Cabinet Secretary, had suggested sacking Matt Hancock back in March of last year.
Yes, and exactly. And herein lies the problem for Keir Starmer trying to brandish Dominic Cummings' oral testimony, as it were, as a trump card, because it is fundamentally a case of he said, and without note, by the way, that Dominic Cummings has not been playing the much vaunted audio recordings of everything the Prime Minister ever said privately to the Select Committee. In the absence of documentary evidence, and for the most explosive claims, there is still very little. Keir Starmer is leaving himself vulnerable to being swatted away quite...
Yeah, he's asking quite broad questions and he's getting quite broad answers, and we're probably not getting very far on that. But I mean, a bit of support for Matt Hancock, but not masses from Boris Johnson, as we said. Anyway, let's go back. This is now question number 5 from Keir Starmer.
Speaker, the Prime Minister can't have it both ways. Either his former adviser is telling the truth, in which case the Prime Minister should answer the allegations, or the Prime Minister has to suggest that his former adviser is not telling the truth, which raises serious questions about the Prime Minister's judgment in appointing him in the first place. There's a pattern of behaviour here. There was clearly a lack of planning, poor decision-making and a lack of transparency. And a Prime Minister who was absent from the key decisions, including 5 early COBRA meetings, and who was, to quote his former adviser, 1,000% too obsessed with the media. But another central allegation briefed overnight is that the Prime Minister delayed the circuit break over the autumn half-term because, quote, COVID was only killing 80-year-olds. Can I remind the Prime Minister that over 83,000 people over 80 lost their lives to this virus, and that his decision to delay for 40 days from the SAGE guidance on the 21st of September until the 31st of October will be seen as one of the single biggest failings of the last year? Now, having been told of the evidence, does the Prime Minister accept that he used the words COVID was only killing 80-year-olds, or words to those effect?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, we saw what happened during the pandemic, and particularly he talks about the September lockdown and my approach to it and the very, very difficult decision that the country faced. And of course this will be a matter for the inquiry to go into, but we have an objective test, Mr. Speaker, in the sense that there was a circuit breaker of the kind he describes in Wales. It did not work, and I'm afraid, Mr. Speaker, I'm absolutely confident that we took the decisions in the best interests of the British people. When it comes to hindsight, Mr. Speaker, I could just remind the Right Honourable Gentleman that he actually, I mean, he denied this at the time, but and then had to correct it, but he voted to stay in the European Medicines Agency, Mr. Speaker, which would have made it impossible.
This really is a greatest hits edition of PMQs.
The vaccine rollout at the pace that we have.
there we are, Patrick McGuire.
Interestingly, not a denial on the substance of the allegation. Just as, if you recall that heady Sunday night when the Daily Mail front page talking about letting the bodies pile high first broke, Downing Street were unequivocal and said this did not happen. But every time you get a minister at the dispatch box fielding a similar allegation, Michael Gove didn't categorically deny that. That definitely wasn't a categorical denial. They choose not to be so unambiguous. So that's mildly interesting. If the rest of the answer was very much not
drifted off into the European Medicines Agency and all of that. In terms of the art of PMQs and exploiting this crisis for political advantage, so far do you think Keir Starmer's doing enough to insert himself into this? I mean, essentially, the star of the show today is Dominic Cummings. But, you know, a real political skill is to insert yourself into the story of the day.
I would say Keir Starmer is encountering the problem he always faces, and that he isn't indeed inserting himself into the narrative, but he's leaving himself vulnerable, as, look, any opposition leader would in a pandemic, of, to use an Irish phrase, hurling from the ditch or, you know, backseat driving. To say after you've missed the junction, oh, you really ought to have left the motorway there. it's a position that garners very little public sympathy or political capital for obvious reasons.
And clearly, lots of you have texted in basically saying this, that this is, you know, if you're a political nerd, this is absolute, you know, this is crack in terms of your obsessions. But, you know, we shouldn't forget in that poll, YouGov poll you had in Redbox this week, 14% of people say they trust Dominic Cummings to tell the truth on coronavirus. So although he's fascinating to listen to, he's not necessarily a trusted witness for the country.
No, and ultimately, who in their right mind is paying close attention, like you and I are, to a joint sitting of the Health and Science Select Committees?
Well, valued Times Radio listeners, but yes, I accept that they are.
Yes,
they were
sorry.
Class above all the rest of the country. OK, let's go back. Let's see if Keir Starmer can pull it all together and land a punch with his final question at PMQs.
Mr. Speaker, it's not me giving evidence this morning. It's his former adviser. And I note the Prime Minister's careful not to refute these allegations. Mr. Speaker, what we're seeing today is the latest chapter of a story of confusion, chaos and deadly misjudgments from this government. From a Prime Minister governing by press release, not a plan. In the last 24 hours, we've seen the same mistakes made again, with the ridiculous way 1.7 million people in Bolton, Burnley, Bedford, Blackburn, Kirklees, Hounslow, Leicester and North Tyneside have been treated. In the light of the drip of these very serious allegations and the failure of the Prime Minister to provide even basic answers and continuing mistakes affecting millions of people, does the Prime Minister now recognise he must bring forward the timing of the public inquiry into COVID and that it should start this summer and as soon as possible?
No, Mr. Speaker, as I've said before, I'm not going to concentrate valuable official time on that now, whilst we're still battling a pandemic. And I thought, actually, that was what the House had agreed on. And Mr. Speaker, he continues to play these pointless political games whilst we get on with delivering on the people's priorities. 14 new hospitals, 8,771 more police on our streets. Now, we're getting on with sorting out the railways, Mr. Speaker. We're giving the young people the opportunity of home ownership in a way they've never had before, with 95% more mortgages. And we've delivered 60 million vaccinations across this country. More, and he loves these European comparisons, Mr. Speaker, more than any other European country, including 22 million second doses. And that, with great respect to the right honourable gentleman, I believe that is the priority of the British people. That's really what they're focused on, whilst he voted to stay in the European Medicines Agency. They vacillate, Mr. Speaker. We vaccinate. They deliberate. We deliver.
And you might have noticed there's a bit more noise in the background there. There are actually a few more MPs in the House of Commons than there have been for some time. There's a slight relaxation of the rules. Not huge cheers from either side, really, there. In the light of the drip, that's probably one of my favourite visual metaphors from Keir Starmer there. He suggested the public inquiry should be brought forward to the summer and got a straightforward no.
Yes, again, an answer the Prime Minister has given before. And look, ultimately, a lot of politics, a lot of political messaging is asking the same question or making the same point again and again and again and again, until such time as the public notice and agree with you, or until such time as you can elicit a change in direction from your opponents. Unfortunately for Keir Starmer, at the moment he's getting neither, and he's not going to get either for the foreseeable future. I mean, watching that exchange, and indeed watching the entire exchange between Keir Starmer and Boris Johnson, you just think, who would be leader of the opposition? One, who would be leader of the opposition during a pandemic? And three, who would be leader of the Labour Party?
I actually wonder, and he sort of touched on it in the sixth question, might he have been better focusing on handling of the pandemic now, the confusion? He listed all those towns and cities where they'd suddenly had these rules changed. You know, confusion right now, and maybe referring it back to Dominic Cummings.
Yes, because Labour still have this. They're not doing. They're much more willing to criticise the government than they were in the early days of the pandemic for obvious reasons. But they still have this sort of vestigial desire to be constructive, be perceived as constructive. But the risk, if you focus all your criticism on a bit of the pandemic that most of the public are inclined to now forget or give the government the benefit of the doubt, and you implicitly accept the government's argument, well, it's hard not to, that the vaccine rollout is going brilliantly. And if your focus is on the first half of the pandemic, as you say, you're neglecting areas where it's still possible to make hay, to draw a line of continuity between the start of the disaster, the chaos and confusion at the start of the pandemic, and now, rather than implicitly accepting the government's argument that it was rubbish then, but we've really got a grip on it now.
Yeah, that would be a sort of slightly different way to sort of tie it all together. Well, that was Keir Starmer's attempt at taking on Boris Johnson. Let's hear now from Ian Blackford, the SNP leader in Westminster. This is what he had to say.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and can I associate myself with the remarks of Prime Minister for those seeking justice for Hillsborough, to quote the song, "You'll Never Walk Alone." Mr. Speaker, 128,000 people have died of coronavirus in the United Kingdom. This morning, the Prime Minister's most senior former adviser, Dominic Cummings, apologised on behalf of the UK government. He said, "When the public needed us most, we failed. We know that the Prime Minister made a series of catastrophic errors throughout the crisis. He went on holiday when he should have been leading efforts to tackle the pandemic. He was too slow to go into lockdown. He failed to secure our borders. He sent millions of people back to their offices prematurely. There is no doubt that these mistakes cost many thousands of lives. When even a disgraced figure like Dominic Cummings is willing to own up and apologise, isn't it time that the Prime Minister does the same?"
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, I take full responsibility for everything that has happened. I've said before, and he will recall, both in this House and elsewhere, I am truly sorry for the suffering that the people of this country have experienced. But I maintain my point that the government acted throughout with the intention to save life and protect the NHS, and in accordance with the best scientific advice. That's exactly what we did.
Ian Blackford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The evidence we've heard this morning is extraordinary, but sadly not surprising. It paints a familiar pattern of behaviour. A negligent Prime Minister, more concerned with his own self-interest than the interests of the United Kingdom. When people were dying, the United Kingdom government was considering chicken pox parties and joking about injecting the Prime Minister with COVID live on TV. We had a circus act when we needed serious government. Isn't it the case that what the country needed leadership most, the Prime Minister was missing in action? Thousands have paid the ultimate price for his failure. When will the Prime Minister finally accept responsibility for the failures of his government?
I see what Boris Johnson
has to say. Mr. Speaker, as I said repeatedly in this House, I take full responsibility for everything that the government did and will continue to do so. And one of the reasons we've set up an independent public inquiry, because I believe the people of this country do deserve to have daylight shone on all the issues he raised. I must say I don't recognise the events that he describes, but I do think that we acted throughout with the intention of saving life, of protecting the NHS, and of taking the country through the worst pandemic for 100 years. And I think it's also true that we're in a much more fortunate position now, thanks to the efforts of the British people and the fastest vaccine rollout in Europe. And I'm grateful for that as well.
Well, there we are. For the first time, this idea of chickenpox parties and injecting himself with coronavirus on TV were raised, but unfortunately, as is Ian Blackford's style occasionally, in a broader series of questions and thoughts and points. although Boris Johnson did say, I don't recognise the events as he describes them.
By which he presumably means the chickenpox party that went ahead.
I assume so, yes, exactly.
Much to Mark Sedwill's disappointment, if you believe Dominic Cummings. Really interesting to hear Ian Blackford, of all people, cite Dominic Cummings as, and indeed Keir Starmer. One of the weird quirks of this Select Committee testimony is that you're having people who, as you said earlier, have expended so much time and energy trying to dismiss Dominic Cummings as beyond the pale, as now a paragon of every possible virtue. And honesty. But yes, I think probably the most significant bit of the Prime Minister's answer there was whenever he's faced one of these difficult questions, he issues that sort of blanket apology for upset caused, claims full responsibility without necessarily accepting their version of events or their diagnosis of the government's failings, and then deferring to the upcoming inquiry, which serves a very powerful political purpose.
Well, just while we've been dipping into PMQs, Dominic Cummings in the last few minutes has admitted anyone leading the country through a global pandemic would have struggled. He said, I've been critical of the Prime Minister, but if you dropped, you know, Bill Gates or someone like that into that job on the 1st of March, the most competent people in the world you could possibly find, any of them would have had a complete nightmare. There's no doubt the Prime Minister made some very bad misjudgments and got some very serious things wrong. It's also the case, there's no doubt, that he was extremely badly let down by the whole system. And it was a system failure, of which I include myself in that as well. I also failed.
Bill, you know, that reference to Bill Gates is exactly what someone would say if they wanted to disguise the fact that he's controlling us all via the vaccine.
For the benefit of the tape, Patrick is joking and Bill Gates is not controlling you through your vaccine. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Red Box Podcast. Don't forget you can listen to me live Monday to Friday, 10 till 1 on Times Radio. We bring you the best bits here on the podcast. And if you're feeling particularly nice, why not rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts from?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.